shortage of 2 million qualified employees for manufacturing-related jobs in the coming years is projected. Physical robots aren't the only AI systems that need training. So does AI software. And this is where training machines to become more human-like becomes important. Training requires a multitude of roles and jobs. At the simple end of the spectrum, trainers help natural language processors and language translators make fewer errors. At the complex end, AI algorithms must be trained to mimic human behaviors. Customer service chatbots, for example, need to be tweaked to detect the complexities and subtleties of human communication. At Yahoo, human trainers are trying to teach the company's language processing system that people do not always literally mean what they say. Thus far, they have developed an algorithm that can detect sarcasm on social media and websites with an accuracy of at least 80%. As AI creeps across industries, more businesses will need trainers for their physical and software-based systems. As a first step, consider using expert employees who already work closely with AI or with the systems that will integrate AI as initial trainers. Their tacit knowledge can often make the difference in a system that works well and one that is prone to failure. Then, after a system has learned the fundamentals, consider next-level training, which can provide further nuance and resilience, as demonstrated in the following examples. An empathy trainer is an individual who will teach AI systems to display compassion. This may sound far-fetched, but the startup Coco, mentioned in Chapter 4, which sprung from the MIT Media Lab, has developed a machine learning system that can help chatbots like Apple's Siri and Amazon's Alexa respond with sympathy and depth to people's questions. Humans are now training the Coco algorithm to respond more empathetically to people who might, for example, be frustrated that their luggage has been lost, that they've bought a defective product, or that their cable service keeps going on the blink, even after repeated attempts to fix it. The goal is for the system to be able to talk people through a problem or difficult situation using the appropriate amount of empathy, compassion, and maybe even humor. Whenever Coco responds inappropriately, a human trainer helps correct that action, and over time, the machine learning algorithm gets better at determining the best response. The example highlights the potential of such leading-edge AI. Without Coco, Alexa responds to a user's anxieties by issuing canned, repetitive responses, such as, "I'm sorry to hear that," or "sometimes talking to a friend can help." With Coco, Alexa becomes much more helpful. In a verbatim transcription of Alexa with Coco responding to a person who says he's worried that he'll fail an upcoming exam, Alexa says, "Exams are really stressful, but a little anxiety can help us succeed. It sharpens our minds. It's your body's way to prepare itself for action. It's actually a really good thing. I wonder if you could think of your nerves as your secret weapon. Easier said than done, I know, but I think you'll do much better than you think." For customer service applications that use AI, a well-trained, empathetic bot could differentiate you from the competition. In addition to learning empathy, advanced AI systems will also learn to become more human-like from personality trainers. It might seem almost flippant to suggest that AI systems will need to develop certain personalities, but consider how important a technology like Microsoft's Cortana can be in terms of establishing and maintaining a brand, as discussed in Chapter 4. Take, for example, Cortana's confident, competent, and caring demeanor. Thanks to extensive training at Microsoft, Cortana comes across as helpful, but not bossy. She might, for instance, learn what times a particular person might be most receptive to receiving suggestions. All this is very much in keeping with the Microsoft brand, which has long espoused user empowerment. Personality trainers can come from a variety of backgrounds. Consider Robin Ewing, who used to develop and pitch TV scripts to film studios in Hollywood. Now, Ewing is deploying her creative talents to help engineers develop the personality of Sophie, an AI program in the healthcare field. Among other tasks, Sophie will remind customers to take their medication and will regularly check with them to see how they're feeling. Personality trainers like Ewing certainly don't have typical high-tech resumes. At Microsoft, a team that includes a poet, a novelist and a playwright, is responsible for helping to develop Cortana's personality. The proper training of bots like Cortana will become increasingly important as those applications assume the anthropomorphic faces of many brands. Some marketing experts already foresee the evolution of brands from one-way interactions, brand to consumer, to two-way relationships. In these customer interchanges, AI becomes the new face of your brand, as we detailed in the last chapter. As chatbots and brands evolve in that way, they will need to be trained with a global perspective, a task that will be the responsibility of worldview and localization trainers, just as employees who work abroad need to understand the cultural cues and some of the language of their international colleagues. So too do bots need to be sensitive to human variations across the globe. Worldview and localization trainers will help ensure that certain AI systems are imbued with a perspective that takes into account myriad regional differences. In certain countries, for example, people don't have the same anxieties about robots and increasing automation as people in the United States and Western Europe. The Japanese, in particular, seem to have a strong fascination and cultural affinity for robots, potentially easing the path for greater machine-human collaborations. Worldview trainers need to be aware of such differences. Giving chatbots cultural awareness can help avoid confusion and embarrassment and foster a sense of trust in the brand. The training of AI systems to assume human-like traits and global perspectives can be aided greatly by interaction modelers. These individuals help train the behavior of machines by using expert employees as models. For instance, Julie Shaw, a robotics professor at MIT, has been developing robots that can shadow people in their jobs so that they can eventually perform certain tasks. One goal is that the robots will make certain rudimentary decisions, interrupting one job to complete a more crucial task, and then returning to the original job, just as a human worker would. AI training doesn't necessarily have to be done in-house. Like payroll, IT, and other functions, the training of AI systems can be crowdsourced or outsourced. One such third-party crowdsourcer called Mighty AI ingeniously uses crowdsourcing techniques to help train systems in vision recognition. For example, identifying lakes, mountains, and roads from photographs, and natural language processing. The company has amassed copious amounts of training data that it can then deploy for different clients. One client has retained Mighty AI to teach its machine learning platform to extract intent and meaning from human conversations. Previously, Init AI, another AI company, had attempted to do the training itself by having employees stage dialogue to come up with sample conversations. But that approach was difficult to scale, a limitation that eventually led Init AI to outsource the work. Working with Mighty AI, Init AI created complex tasks from customizable templates by relying on the help of a community of pre-qualified users. With the appropriate domain knowledge, skills, and specialties, those users could chat with each other in various role-playing scenarios, approximating real-life interactions between customers and company employees. Init AI could then utilize the resulting data to build its own conversation models, from which the company could then train its machine learning platform. Clearly, AI systems will only be as good as the data they are trained on. These applications search for patterns in data, and any biases in that information will then be reflected in subsequent analyses. It's like garbage in, garbage out, but the more accurate saying would be biases in, biases out. In an intriguing experiment, computer scientists at DeepMind, a Google-owned firm, trained an AI system to play two different games, one that involved hunting, and another that focused on fruit gathering. The results were striking. When trained on the hunting game, the AI system later exhibited behavior that could be highly aggressive. When trained on the fruit gathering game, it instead later displayed a much greater tendency toward cooperation. That's why the role of data hygienist is crucial. Not only do the algorithms themselves need to be unbiased, but the data used to train them must also be free from any slanted perspective. In the coming years, data hygienists will become increasingly important as companies use information from a variety of sources, biometrics, satellite images, traffic data, social media, and so on. Much can be data exhaust, that is, information created as a byproduct of another process. Think of all the daily data that's generated on Facebook. Leading-edge companies have been quick to explore the potential uses of data exhaust in this new era of big data. The hedge fund BlackRock, for example, has been analyzing satellite images of China to better understand the industrial activity in that country. These types of analyses have even led to a new type of financial instrument. Quantamental funds, which rely on sophisticated machine learning algorithms to analyze traditional financial information, as well as data exhaust, in order to predict the value of certain assets in the market. Such innovative applications require the expertise of data hygienists, who, often working in conjunction with sustainers, detailed later in the chapter, must not only convert data exhaust into a form that's suitable for input to an AI system, but also ensure that that information is free of any noise or hidden biases. Explainers. The second category of new jobs needs to bridge the gap between technologists and business leaders. These jobs will become more important as AI systems become increasingly opaque. Many executives have already become uneasy with the black box nature of sophisticated machine learning algorithms, especially when those systems recommend actions that may go against the grain of conventional wisdom, or that could be controversial. Consider Zest Finance, which helps lenders better predict credit risk and expand financing to borrowers who might not ordinarily qualify. The company enables lenders to analyze thousands of data points on an applicant, well beyond the standard FICO scores and credit histories traditionally used, and applies cutting-edge AI technology to arrive at a yes or no decision. The average annual income of an applicant is around $30,000, and many have a history of defaults. The loans are typically small, averaging $600, with high interest rates. Given the nature of its business, Zest Finance's customers need to be able to explain the inner workings of the AI system they use to approve loans. The company has described how it ranks applicants with respect to various categories, such as veracity, stability, and prudence. If someone's reported income is much higher than similar peers, then his veracity score is lowered. If he has moved a dozen times over the past few years, then his stability score takes a hit. And if he doesn't take the time to read all the conditions of the loan before applying for it, then his prudence score suffers. Then, a suite of algorithms, each performing a different analysis, analyzes all that data. One of those algorithms, for example, checks whether certain information might signal larger events, such as a missed payment resulting from a person's illness. All that analysis then results in a Zest Finance score that ranges from 0 to 100. Those sophisticated algorithms have enabled Zest Finance to uncover numerous interesting correlations. For example, the company has discovered that, for whatever reason, people who use all capital letters to fill out their loan applications tend to be riskier borrowers. Such results have enabled the firm to continually shave fractions of percentage points off its default rate, enabling it to serve consumers that wouldn't traditionally qualify for loans. But the point here is that Zest Finance is able to explain how it makes its loan decisions, as it approves roughly one-third of the people who apply. As companies rely on increasingly advanced AI systems to determine their actions, especially those that affect consumers, they need to be able to explain and justify those decisions. Indeed, governments have already been considering regulations in this area. For example, the European Union's new General Data Protection Regulation, slated to take effect in 2018, will effectively create a right to explanation, allowing consumers to question and fight any decision that affects them, and that was made purely on an algorithmic basis. Companies that deploy advanced AI systems will need skilled employees who can help explain the inner workings of complex algorithms. One such person will be the algorithm forensics analyst, responsible for holding any algorithm accountable for its results. When a system makes a mistake, or when its decisions lead to unintended negative consequences, the forensics analyst must be able to conduct an autopsy to understand the causes of that behavior so that it can be corrected. Certain types, like the falling rule list algorithms, which deploy a specific ordered list of if-then rules, are relatively straightforward to explain. Others, like deep learning algorithms, are not that simple. Nevertheless, the forensics analyst needs to have the proper training and skill set to examine in detail all the algorithms deployed by the organization. Here, techniques like the local interpretable model agnostic explanations, LIME, can be extremely useful. LIME doesn't care about the actual AI algorithms used. In fact, it doesn't need to know anything about the inner workings of that system. To perform an autopsy of any result, it makes slight changes to the input variables and observes how they alter that decision. With that information, LIME can highlight the various data that led to a particular conclusion. So, for instance, if an expert HR system has identified the best candidate for a particular R&D job, LIME can identify the variables that led to that conclusion, such as education and deep expertise in a particular narrow field, as well as the evidence against it, such as inexperience in working on collaborative teams. Using such techniques, the forensics analyst can explain why someone was denied credit, or why a manufacturing process was halted, or why a marketing campaign was targeted toward only a subset of consumers. Even before the need to conduct autopsies, though, companies should have a transparency analyst responsible for classifying the reasons a particular AI algorithm acts as a black box. Different reasons produce different levels of transparency and auditability. For instance, some algorithms are intentionally designed to be black boxes to protect proprietary intellectual property, while others are black boxes due to the complicated nature of the code or the scale of data and decision-making the algorithm is managing. A transparency analyst is someone who classifies systems and maintains a database or library of information about a system's accessibility. That database will be invaluable to the explainability strategist. These individuals are responsible for making important judgment calls about which AI technologies might best be deployed for specific applications. A huge consideration here is accuracy versus explainability. A deep learning system, for example, provides a high level of prediction accuracy, but companies may have difficulty explaining how those results were derived. In contrast, a decision tree may not lead to results with higher prediction accuracy, but will enable a significantly greater explainability. So, for instance, an internal system that optimizes a supply chain with small tolerances for scheduling deliveries might best deploy deep learning technology, whereas a healthcare or consumer-facing application that will have to stand up to considerable regulatory scrutiny may be better off utilizing falling rule list algorithms. In addition, the explainability strategist might also decide that for a particular application, the company might be better off avoiding the use of AI altogether. Instead, the best option might be a traditional rules engine. To make such decisions, the explainability strategist must take into account not just technological issues, but also financial, legal, ethical, and other key considerations. Sustainers. In 2015, a robot in a Volkswagen plant in Germany grabbed a worker and fatally crushed him. That tragic death highlighted the societal concerns over our growing reliance on automated tools. Ever since computers began to assume increasingly complex tasks, people's fears have heightened about the possibility of the machines running amok. From HAL in 2001 A Space Odyssey to the cyborgs of the Terminator movie series, popular culture has only stoked the anxieties of the general public. As it turns out, that robot in Germany didn't maliciously turn on the worker and attack him. Initial reports were that a programming error, in other words, a human mistake, was the cause. While this horrific accident is an extreme example, ensuring the proper use of AI is a primary responsibility of the final category of new jobs, sustainers, who must continually work to ensure that AI systems are functioning properly as tools that exist only to serve us, helping people in their work to make their lives easier. By doing so, sustainers will help allay fears of a dystopian future in which robots become sentient and overtake society. Obviously, one of the best ways to ensure that sophisticated robots and other AI systems are functioning as intended is to design them right in the first place. This is where companies need the expertise of experienced context designers. When developing a new system, these individuals take into account a variety of contextual factors, including the business environment, the process task, the individual users, cultural issues, and so forth. Even seemingly small details can be important. When General Motors and Fanuc were designing a new flexible manufacturing robot that would work alongside humans, they struggled with what color paint to use. Orange seemed to imply danger, and yellow was interpreted as caution. In the end, the engineers settled on a lime hue they called safety green. Of course, even well-designed systems can result in problems, and sometimes the issue is that the technology is functioning only too well, resulting in unintended, harmful behavior. Years ago, the noted science fiction author Isaac Asimov listed his three laws of robotics. A robot may not injure a human being, or, through inaction, allow a human being to come to harm. A robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. A robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second laws. Introduced in the 1942 short story Runaround, the three laws are certainly still relevant today, but they are merely a starting point. Should, for example, a driverless vehicle try to protect its occupants by swerving to avoid a child running into the street if that action might lead to a collision with a nearby pedestrian? Such questions are why companies that design and deploy sophisticated AI technologies will require AI safety engineers. These individuals must try to anticipate the unintended consequences of an AI system and also address any harmful occurrences with the appropriate urgency. In a recent Accenture survey, we found that less than one-third of companies have a high degree of confidence in the fairness and auditability of their AI systems, and less than half have similar confidence in the safety of those systems. Moreover, past research has found that about one-third of people are fearful of AI, and nearly one-fourth believe the technology will harm society. Clearly, those statistics indicate fundamental issues that need to be resolved for the continued usage of AI technologies. That's where sustainers will play a crucial role. One of the most important functions is that of ethics compliance manager. These individuals will act as watchdogs and ombudsmen for upholding generally accepted norms of human values and morals. If, for example, an AI system for credit approval is discriminating against people in certain geographic areas, then the ethics compliance manager is responsible for investigating and addressing that ethical and potentially legal breach. Other biases might be subtler. For example, a search algorithm that responds with images of only white women when someone queries loving grandmother. The ethics compliance manager might work with an algorithm forensics analyst to uncover the reasons for those search results and then implement the appropriate fixes. In the future, AI itself will play an increasingly important role to ensure that advanced systems are operating within human ethical and moral bounds. Mark O. Riddell and Brent Harrison, researchers at the School of Interactive Computing at Georgia Institute of Technology, have developed an AI prototype named Quixote that can learn about ethics. That, for example, one shouldn't steal by reading simple stories. According to Riddell and Harrison, the system is able to reverse engineer human values through stories about humans interact with one another. Such stories reflect a culture and society, encoding commonly shared knowledge, social protocols, examples of proper and improper behavior, and strategies for coping with adversity. By reading myriad stories, Quixote has learned that, for instance, striving for efficiency is fine, except when it conflicts with other important considerations. Even given such innovations, though, human ethics compliance managers will still need to monitor and help ensure the proper operation of those sophisticated systems. An AI system could be technically proficient and ethical, but still be detrimental to an organization. That's why companies will need automation ethicists. These individuals will be responsible for evaluating the non-economic impact of AI systems. One important issue is people's general acceptance for these new technologies. Employees are naturally fearful of losing their jobs to an automated application that performs just as well, if not better, than a human could. Such emotions can be especially powerful in response to robotic AI systems. Masahiro Mori, a Japanese robotics expert, in a study of how we respond to robots, has discovered an interesting effect. As a robot becomes more lifelike, our affinity and empathy for it increases until a certain point. Then, as the robot becomes more like us, we quickly become repulsed by any slight imperfections. But as those imperfections are fixed and the robot becomes less distinguishable from a human, our positive emotions toward it grow again, eventually approaching an empathy level similar to that of one human toward another. Mori labeled the sudden drop the uncanny valley, a phenomenon that can impede the success of human-to-robot interactions in the workplace. Automation ethicists need to be aware of such phenomena. In general, AI systems that perform well should be promoted, with variants replicated and deployed to other parts of the organization. On the other hand, AI systems with poor performance should be demoted, and if they can't be improved, they should be decommissioned. These tasks will be the responsibility of machine relations managers, individuals who will function like HR managers, except that they will oversee AI systems, not human workers. They will work within a machine relations department and regularly conduct performance reviews of all the AI systems that the organization deploys. The machine reviews will consider myriad factors, including the objective performance of the AI systems as well as various soft goals, such as striving to fulfill organizational values, like increased diversity and a commitment toward improving the environment. When the challenges are human. The issues we've raised in this chapter are a starting point. We outlined only a handful of new roles that will emerge as AI extends into more mission-critical business processes. The roles we've described are merely a glimpse of the many new types of jobs that will be created in the future. Indeed, as organizations grow with their human and machine teams, they'll inevitably develop their own specialized versions of trainers, explainers, and sustainers. These emerging jobs, which demonstrate the importance of human skills in the missing middle, require that leaders think differently about the needs of human and machine teams. This is both the mindset and leadership parts of our MELDS framework. For instance, the new jobs will require a range of education, training, and experience. Empathy trainers, for example, may not need a traditional college degree. Individuals with a high school education and who are inherently empathetic can be taught the necessary skills through in-house training programs. Many of the new positions may lead to the rise of a no-collar workforce that slowly evolves out of traditional blue-collar jobs in manufacturing and other professions. On the other hand, a number of the new jobs, like ethics compliance manager, will require advanced degrees and a specialized skill set. For example, earlier in this chapter, we described various training roles, and the most advanced companies have already been adapting their training processes by adopting techniques from the child developmental psychology field. The bottom line is that companies deploying AI systems need to rethink their talent and learning strategies in order to better attract, train, manage, and retain these individuals. And it's clear that the AI will require new capabilities, policies, and processes. not just in IT, but across the business. We will discuss the corresponding managerial issues in greater detail in Chapter 7. After all, as with so many new technologies, the challenges are often more human than technical. 6. Super results from everyday people. 3 ways AI unleashes new levels of productivity. If you want to build a chair from scratch, you must first invent the universe. Not so easy, right? We paraphrased this idea from Carl Sagan, who in his famous quotation actually referred to baking an apple pie, not building a chair. But his thinking still holds. Sagan simply meant that no seemingly straightforward task would be possible without the laws of nature that underpin it. Put another way, there is a universe of physics and math inside every apple pie and inside every chair. Luckily for bakers and designers alike, their creative process assumes that most of the useful universe is already figured out. The tough parts, the alchemical combination of ingredients, or the angles of a chair's legs, are hidden away. They get folded into a trusted recipe, say, or CAD software. But what if that trusted recipe and standard software are somehow holding back our potential for novel, more interesting, possibly superior pies and chairs? What if we could make tools that can help open the universe again? Help creative people break out of old habits or away from conventional wisdom, but without the burden of truly inventing the universe every time? These tools do exist today. The elbow chair from designers at Autodesk is a prime example of what's become possible. The elbow chair is a striking piece of furniture because it's both beautiful and has a provenance unlike any other chair. Its simple frame is made of walnut, which highlights its natural, organic lines. The two front legs seem to grow from the bottom, and where they hit the seat, they gently curve back to form smooth, sloping armrests that then meld into the single-panel, horizontal chair back. The two rear legs also seem to grow from below, and then, at the seat, fork up and forward into 3 thinner branches. 2 support an armrest, and 1 on each side holds up the chair back. Adding to the natural look are subtle curves and ripples in the seat and arms near the joints. It's as if a wise, willowy tree were asked to design a chair for a person, and this is what it thought up. Perhaps even more compelling than the aesthetics, though, is the fact that the elbow chair's design came from designers working in conjunction with AI-enabled software. The team at Autodesk that designed the elbow chair used Dreamcatcher software's generative design features to crack open previously unavailable design space. Hundreds of potential chair shapes, all the while adhering to precise engineering specifications. The seat was to be 18 inches off the ground, and the structure would need to hold 300 pounds. It was to be inspired by Hans Wegner's round chair and the well-known Lambda chair. The machine learning power generative design began with a hybrid model of the two chairs and produced a large volume of unexpected shapes that matched the engineering criteria. Along the way, the designs morphed and changed, as if the chair itself was an evolving biological system, and the designers became curators, wielding their particular aesthetic tastes and intuitive preferences to choose one of the hundreds of millions of possible chairs they found the most satisfying. In the end, their final selection was the elbow chair, a design that required 18% less material than the original model the team started with. Generative design software is a whole new way to approach design, said Jeff Kowalski, Autodesk's chief technology officer. These technologies are not a threat. They're more like superpowers. Superpowers indeed. Suddenly, a designer can see design possibilities so different from what she might have considered before, an unprecedented view of the design space, and a whole new universe of options. And these computer-generated designs might spur her own ideas even further. But what becomes of the human designer, who now has an extra creative appendage? In this scenario, she gets to be an operator, curator, and mentor to this assistive AI design agent. Just like that, the design process is reimagined. Welcome to the right-hand side of the missing middle, where machines augment humans. Artificial intelligence tools are empowering workers in a range of fields, from design to medicine to engineering to factory floor operations. This augmentation comes in a variety of forms, from augmented reality and virtual reality to analytics engines to robot arms and chatbots. But what are the workforce implications of being empowered or augmented by AI? How is introducing AI to a workplace different from the device and technology management that companies already do? Things like handing out laptops, software, and login information during new hire orientation. This chapter argues that AI tools don't just automate routine workplace tasks, although they can do that too, but that they create a symbiotic relationship between people and machines that upends the standard workflow. These new hybrid roles and relationships in the missing middle can offer managers an entirely new lens on their processes and equip people with powerful new capabilities. Three types of augmentation. AI augmentation and its reshaping of business processes is happening now across the three categories of human-machine interaction: amplification, interaction, and embodiment. In the case of amplification, AI agents give people extraordinary data-driven insights, often using real-time data. It's like your brain, but better. The elbow chair example highlights some possibilities of amplification. Generative design software expands the design space beyond what a person might be able to imagine. Other businesses are using worker amplification tools for analyzing customers' sentiments when they interact with companies on Facebook and Twitter, for giving narrative writing advice, and for moderating online comments so internet conversations are constructive and civil. Drug companies are using amplification to monitor the quality control of pharmaceutical drugs after they've been released to the general population. And radiologists are getting help from software that learns the way they hang x-rays and provides patient health data in an easy-to-see format to speed up and improve the accuracy of diagnoses. These workers are all using AI to enhance the effectiveness of their activities and humans' decision-making process. In the case of interaction, AI agents employ advanced interfaces, such as voice-driven natural language processing, to facilitate interactions between people or on behalf of people. These AI agents are often designed to have a personality, and they can function at scale. That is, they can assist many people at once. You see them in personal assistant roles and in customer service. IPsoft's help desk agent Amelia, called Ada in SEB's application, which is described in Chapter 2, is an example of an AI agent that operates in the interaction domain. Embodiment is the third category. While both amplification and interaction are mostly in the software realm, using interfaces that can, in some scenarios, seem almost invisible, embodiment is in tangible physical spaces. It's AI in combination with sensors, motors, and actuators that allow robots to share workspace with humans and engage in physically collaborative work. These robots are on factory floors and in warehouses with people. They come in the form of robot appendages, package-carrying autonomous carts, and drones that deliver medicine. Car companies, in particular, are using the concept of embodiment in their state-of-the-art manufacturing lines. Thanks to lightweight, context-aware robot arms and cobots designed to work closely with people on the line, manufacturers are able to reimagine previously static processes. Meanwhile, workers take on new roles when they collaborate with these smart machines, and businesses can make more varied, adaptable choices about the kinds of products they offer their customers. In all three types of missing middle interactions, amplification, interaction, and embodiment, companies are gaining not only superpowered employees, but also a whole new way of thinking about the ways they run their businesses. AI augmentation allows workers to perform more human, less robotic activities, As certain tasks shift from human to machine, and humans, often working with AI assistants, are able to perform different kinds of work, companies are prompted to reimagine their business processes around entirely new human-machine capabilities. What's more, new augmentation-based relationships demand new kinds of human-computer interfaces. What user interfaces, UI, will dominate in the missing middle? Is AI the new UI? How might augmentation affect your industry? This chapter provides examples of companies that have reimagined their processes around machine-enabled superpowers and addresses some of these questions along the way. AI agents that amplify. Autodesk's Dreamcatcher software uses genetic algorithms to iterate through possible designs. It offers a great example of the way a process changes when a smart agent is at a worker's side. Traditionally, when a designer wants to create a new object, a chair, a bike stem, an airplane partition, she starts by conducting research, sketching ideas, and moving between sketches, computer models, and physical prototypes. There are many iterations during which the designer is making mental calculations, the equivalent of qualitative hunches that nudge designs in one direction or another. With AI, these mental calculations are offloaded to software, which enables the design process to be reimagined so that it can more fully focus on human creativity and aesthetic. Here, the designer begins by setting parameters, and the software proceeds to move through iterations at a quick pace. As the software produces its designs, the designer can further refine her parameters to see where it might lead the outcome. She's essentially steering the design, ultimately deciding on the final design. The process changes, then, from something that's somewhat clunky, slow, and limited, depending on other resources available to the designer, to one in which the designer is more often enacting her most valuable skill, her judgment and design sense. This adaptive and organic approach contrasts with the traditional design process, which was governed by iterations of predetermined steps. Of course, it's not just designers whose work and processes are getting a boost from AI. Philips has a software tool for radiologists called Illumio. One of the software's features is that it includes contextual information about a patient alongside the images, so a radiologist doesn't have to hunt for laboratory results or prior radiology reports, for instance. But perhaps most impressively, the software is context-aware in a number of areas. For instance, it can recognize the anatomy of the radiological images and automatically suggest the correct tool set, such as one that can measure and analyze blood vessels. The software is also able to learn how the radiologist prefers to look at the images, what's known as radiologist's hanging protocol. Illumio is a good example of how AI agents can slide into a pre-existing interface, silently observing and learning the preferences of the person using a software tool, for instance, and incorporating that personalized information into the user experience. Illumio is leveraging AI in its UI so that the relationship between worker and machine is adaptable and improves over time. So far, we've focused on amplification in office jobs, but workers in the field are also benefiting from amplification, thanks to AI-enhanced user interfaces. In particular, AI tools like smart glasses that provide an experience of augmented reality are overhauling maintenance work and in-field training. The glasses overlay digital information or instructions on a worker's field of view. At a global industrial services company, the typical process for wiring a wind turbine's control box requires a technician to move between the control box and the hard copy of an instruction manual. But with an augmented reality-enabled AR hands-free heads-up display, the instructions can be visually projected on top of a technician's workspace. In a side-by-side comparison with the traditional instruction manual method, the AR headset was found to improve the worker's performance by 34% on first use. With no need to spend time ramping up or training to use the new technology, efficiency gains are immediate. A similar example from Boeing demonstrates efficiency improvements of 25%, and other cases show an average productivity improvement of 32%. Agents of interaction. We first described Ada in Chapter 2, where it was part of the virtual help desk at the Swedish bank, SEB. Over time, SEB trained and tested Ada to the point where the bank was confident enough in the system to allow it to be part of the processes that interacts directly with its 1 million customers. Ada is now the first point for customers contacting SEB. The software can answer frequently asked question-type questions, guide users through a process, perform actions within internal systems, and ask follow-up questions to solve a user's problem. Crucially, when Ada encounters a question it can't confidently resolve, it connects to human experts and learns from their interactions with a customer. There are, of course, a variety of interaction agents available for use. As natural language processing software evolves, it's becoming more and more feasible to plug in such agents to existing processes. Some examples are Microsoft's Cortana, Nuance Communications' Nina chatbot, and IBM's Watson, a natural language AI system that's used for various applications from banking and insurance to travel and health. At Accenture, for instance, Alice is an agent that uses Watson to answer common requests, and Colette is another Watson-based agent that answers home buyers' questions about mortgages. Interaction agents needn't simply be a voice on the phone or an icon on a computer screen. Some agents have physical forms as well. By now, most people are familiar with consumer-facing natural language gadgets like Amazon's Alexa, Google Home, and Apple's Siri. But there are others. BQ Zowie, a squat tabletop robot originally designed for children, has open architecture and reprogrammability that makes it ripe for various other uses. It's now able to answer questions for some banking customers via chatbots. Similarly, the small humanoid robot Now uses IBM Watson's Q&A service to answer questions about banking, travel, and health, and technical queries about the company's systems, applications, and products. In these examples of interaction, the software or robotic agent has access to vast stores of data and uses a natural language interface to quickly access and disseminate that information. Companies that serve the needs of many customers at once can benefit from interaction modality in the missing middle. When interaction is well understood, it can revamp the customer service process, not only in customer service centers, but at points of sale and inside consumers' homes. Interaction can also alleviate previously tedious, repetitive tasks for workers. Once these tasks are gone, management and leadership can reimagine workers' processes around unusual, interesting, more nuanced customer service situations. AI at Airbus. Designers at Airbus used Dreamcatcher's AI capabilities to redesign a partition that separates the passenger compartment from the galley in the cabin of an A320. Engineers wanted the partition to be lightweight, to save fuel so the plane would have a smaller carbon footprint, yet strong enough to anchor two jump seats for flight attendants. On the computer screen, designers watched the software cycle through thousands of bizarre, unexpected designs for the internal structure of the partition. The engineers ended up trusting one of the weird-looking ones. Instead of looking like a solid panel designed by professionals, the final partition looked more like a child's scribbles in a coloring book, while still meeting the criteria for strength, weight, and manufacturability. Part of the reason the structure seemed so odd was that the genetic algorithm was seeded with a starting pattern that, similar to the elbow chair, was based on biological structures. It used slime molds because they efficiently connect to multiple points of contact, and mammalian bones that grow dense at contact points and light and airy elsewhere. Even though the resulting structure looked like a random hash of lines, it was optimized to be strong and light and minimize the material used. Then the engineers built it. Airbus's team 3D printed more than 100 separate partition pieces made of high-strength metal alloy and put it all together. After stress tests and a certification test with aviation authorities, the new partition could appear in Plains by 2018. Rubbing elbows with robots. Amplification and interaction are missing middle categories that mostly augment the mind. Embodiment, in contrast, deals with physical augmentation. Examples are often found in manufacturing, such as in the Mercedes-Benz plant in southwest Germany. This facility processes 1,500 tons of steel a day, pumping out more than 400,000 vehicles a year. With these numbers, you might expect a well-oiled, robot-dominated assembly line operating with as few people as possible. But Mercedes is ditching some of its robots and redesigning its processes to center them around people. The automotive assembly line is changing. The driver of this change is the rise of customizable cars. You can now go online and choose from an expansive array of features on your next car. Gone are the days of identical Model Ts coming off an assembly line. Even the trend to make cars in three standard trims, common in the United States, is falling out of favor. With so much variation in car manufacturing, the only way to assemble cars fast enough is to bring people back. We're moving away from trying to maximize automation, with people taking a bigger part in industrial processes again, says Marcus Schaefer, head of production planning at the Mercedes. When we have people and machines cooperate, such as a person guiding a part automated robot, we're much more flexible and can produce many more products on one production line. The variety is too much to take on for the machines. Instead of dividing manufacturing plants into a heavy-lifting robot section, usually fenced off from people for safety reasons, and another area for people to dexterously fiddle with wires and perform more delicate tasks, a new breed of cobots is enabling humans and robots to work side by side or in collaboration. These cobots are built with smart software that learns over time and sensors that allow it to adapt to the situation at hand and be responsive to people. In practice, this means that the cobot takes on repetitive and precision tasks, as well as the heavy lifting, while a person brings the brains and dexterity to the operation. Cobots in this way are literally extending the worker's physical capabilities. Research from MIT corroborates that this kind of human-machine collaboration is effective for business. In a study with Mercedes competitor BMW, researchers determined that human-robot interactions in the car plant were about 85% more productive than either humans or robots on their own. At the Mercedes plant, a worker grabs a console with buttons and a visual display, which he uses to guide a robot arm to pick up a heavy wedge of steel that will make up the floor of a car's trunk. The robotic system is equipped with sensors to see its environment and software that can quickly deliver instructions to the robot's actuators if, for instance, a person steps in the way or the car isn't perfectly positioned. This type of cobot system has the worker in control, guiding the building of each car. Industrial work becomes decidedly less manual and more like being a pilot, where the robot becomes an extension of the worker's body. The cobot arrangement is good for manufacturing because it allows for flexibility and adaptability in processes, and it appears to be good for people too. One worker who collaborates with cobots at SEW Eurodrive, a manufacturer of motors, describes the work environment. "This is more satisfying because I'm making the whole system. I only did one part of the process on the old line." Cobots are good for human ergonomics, too. At a BMW plant in South Carolina, engineers analyzed their car-making processes to see how a lightweight robot arm could fit alongside its peopled production line. They found that the act of fixing the door panel, which safeguards the electrical wiring, is best done by a cobot on the line. Previously performed by humans, it was a task that had produced wrist strain. What's more, people seem to be less consistent at the task than they were at others. Now, a person loosely fits the door panel, and then the door moves along the line to the nearby cobot to finish the job. The cobot is outfitted with cameras and other sensors, so it can tell when a person is close. Unlike traditional industrial robots that perform set movements over and over, without awareness of their surroundings, The cobot in the BMW plant deftly avoids knocking into people or getting in the way. Furthermore, these robots can be reprogrammed by non-programmers using a tablet. No coding skills are needed. And because they are lightweight, they can be moved anywhere in a warehouse and perform various tasks depending on the need. The human-robot system then acts as an extender of people's ability to work. They're now less likely to get fatigued or injured. Suddenly, a factory job isn't only for workers in their physical prime. Embodiment, as demonstrated in the human-robot systems that many manufacturers are using, is opening up more job opportunities. Some people who may have ruled out manual labor as a work option because of age or physical condition may be able to do the work with the aid of cobots. A similar collaborative dynamic is on display at warehouses. At Amazon fulfillment centers, shelves full of merchandise seem to independently glide down the warehouse aisles toward a human worker who's awaiting the delivery. The shelves are carried by squat, rolling robots destined to bring the goods to the worker, who plucks the items off the shelves and puts them into a box to ship. Computer vision helps the robots know where they are in the warehouse. Sensors keep them from running into each other, and machine learning algorithms help them determine the best paths and right-of-ways on a warehouse floor full of other robots. The human worker no longer needs to walk miles a day to retrieve goods for packaging. In another example of embodiment, drones are being tested to deliver healthcare on demand to remote parts of Rwanda, out of reach of traditional medical options. A company called Zipline is pioneering the technology, targeting one of the leading causes of death, postpartum hemorrhage, with a delivery of blood for transfusion. Drones have become a particularly interesting application of AI. Computer vision and smart algorithms process video in real time, thereby allowing people to extend their vision and delivery capabilities up into the air and over miles of potentially impassable terrain. In a project similar to Zipline, Doctors Without Borders has experimented with using a small quadcopter drone from a company called Matternet. The drone takes lab samples of patients with suspected tuberculosis from remote health centers in Papua New Guinea to a major hospital for testing. Another organization called Wings for Aid is using unmanned drones to drop off supplies in difficult-to-reach areas when a natural disaster has struck. In the near term, at least, it looks as if some of the most effective ways that robots can be deployed are in conjunction with people. Robots are skilled at heavy lifting and are superb at repetitive tasks. People are good at adapting on the fly, making judgment calls, and using their hands to manipulate wires, textiles, or other tricky materials. The collaboration between the two is changing the way industries think about their people and their processes. From task replacement to process change. In all three categories on the right side of the missing middle, amplification, interaction, and embodiment, we see that AI offers significant improvements to the way people work, giving them new superpowers. Combine this with the three categories on the left side of the missing middle, training, explaining, and sustaining, which highlight the ways that workers improve the effectiveness of AI, and we start to see the coming shift. To tap the full potential of a human-machine workplace, organizations need to recognize that these six new ways of working demand a complete reimagination of business processes. Specifically, when a designer can choose from thousands of unexpected and unusual chair designs, all retaining important structural requirements, AI has opened up a universe of creative options that was previously closed. When a car maker can reimagine its factory floor so that people and robots are working in concert, AI has not only facilitated the creation of highly customized cars at scale, requiring a designer that must have the training and skills to take advantage of that freedom, it has essentially transformed the assembly line into a collaborative robot-human workspace. In some situations, as with the technicians who wear heads-up displays, while wiring wind turbine boxes, these innovations can reduce the time it takes to get the job done by a third. But in others, as with Stitch Fix mentioned in the introduction to Part 2, entirely new business models are emerging on the backs of AI technologies. When AI augments workers, we don't just see small, incremental revenue bumps or efficiency gains. We see safer, more engaged workers who can do the work well that they do best. In organizations, AI